Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Monday, April 3rd of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, some world-class flamenco performers are in Boulder to kick off the first ever Boco International Flamenco Festival. We'll hear from the organizers. And the Rocky Flats Stewardship Council will hold a public meeting today as part of ongoing local government and community oversight of the former nuclear weapons site. We'll examine the plant's legacy amid new calls for next-generation nuclear power. After the BBC News headlines, we'll hear the latest commentary from Jim Hightower. Then I'll speak with author and investigative journalist Erica Hayasaki about her most recent book, Somewhere Sisters. At 9 a.m., we'll bring you Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. Then, Doug Gertner will take over from the Denver studio at 9:30 for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still coming up, but first, the headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
Denver High School students returning from spring break this week may see at least one police officer on duty. According to Chalkbeat Colorado, 13 area schools opted to add police, also called school resource officers, following the March 22 shooting at East High School. The Denver School Board suspended a 2020 policy banning police from city schools the day after a student at East High shot and injured two deans. A school board memorandum directed Superintendent Alex Marrero to coordinate with Mayor Michael Hancock to add up to two armed police officers and up to two additional mental health professionals at all Denver high schools through the end of the school year. 13 schools will have resource officers on site Tuesday. That includes East High, the district's largest school, which will have two officers present. Three bills passed by the Colorado House of Representatives are protecting those seeking abortion. KGNU's Jack Armstrong has more.
The Colorado House of Representatives passed three bills created to protect reproductive health care and abortion access in the state. Senate Bill 190 would ban false advertising for anti-abortion centers. Bill 188 would protect providers and patients traveling to Colorado for reproductive health care. And Bill 189, passed Saturday by the House, would require insurance carriers to cover abortions. Democrats introduced the package in Colorado after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last summer. Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives reintroduced a bill last week that would restore the right to abortion care access. Surrounding states have banned or limited abortion procedures since the ruling, making Colorado a destination for patients seeking reproductive care. For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
Election day for Denver is tomorrow, April 4th. Denver residents have run out of time for mailing in ballots, but can still drop them off or vote in person at centers across the city until 7 p.m. on Tuesday. City residents are electing their first new mayor in 12 years. The ballot includes races for Denver City Council, which was responsible for legislating city laws, approving the mayor's budget plan, and deciding how land is zoned. As of Saturday, only about 13% of registered voters had submitted their ballots. First Lady Jill Biden arrived Sunday as part of a national tour to support the president's economic policies. KGNU's Juanita Hurtado reports.
The First Lady is meeting Governor Jared Polis at the state capitol today to highlight how Colorado officials are investigating in workforce training programs at high schools and community colleges. The administration introduced the American Rescue Plan and other bills to create jobs that bolster the economy, address climate change, and rebuild infrastructure. A White House handout says that since the president took office in Colorado, private companies have invested over $4.5 billion in Colorado. For KGNU, I'm Juanita Hurtado.
A 20-year-old CU student was rescued Saturday after she fell about 25 feet from the top of a rock outcropping on Flagstaff Mountain. Boulder County Sheriff's Office says they received a call about the accident near the Lost Gulch trailhead at around 4 p.m. Fire and emergency staff arrived on the scene to provide the young woman medical treatment. They transported her from the rocky ledge to an ambulance, which took her to a Boulder area hospital. The rescue took 2 hours. Police say the woman's injuries were not life-threatening. County assessors in Colorado will begin sending valuation notices to property owners starting May 1st. Forecasters are predicting large property tax increases as county assessors set home appraisal values to the period ending June 30, 2022, when market conditions peaked. 2023 is a reappraisal year for property taxes in Colorado, with state property values established every 2 years in odd-numbered years. Boulder County Assessor Cynthia Braddock told the Longmont Leader her office is required to use sales data from the period of July 1, 2020 through June 30, 2022 for this year's valuation notices. After county assessors determine market values of properties for the established period, taxes are then established by an assessment rate of a home's value and through mill levies from local governments and districts, such as schools and libraries. According to the Colorado Association of Realtors, the median single-family home price in Boulder County was $940,000 in June 2022, with the February 2023 median price dropping below $843,000. Colorado snowpack was well over average last week at 140%, and several resorts have extended their ski and ride seasons for a couple of weeks or more. While the surplus snowpack is good news in the mountains, water officials are monitoring to see whether spring and summer melts fill up reservoirs. Parts of Colorado might no longer be considered in a drought, but recent red flag warnings and dry winds have emergency crews ushering in the fire season early. Over the weekend, firefighters in Golden and Colorado Springs had wildfires mostly contained. In Colorado today, a continuation of the warm, windy weather. Expect a high temperature of 45 degrees. Tonight, the temperature drops to 32 degrees, bringing scattered rain or snow into the morning. That precipitation is expected to continue on and off throughout this week. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Boulder, Colorado may not be the first city that comes to mind when thinking about world-class flamenco artists, but a couple of well-connected artists hope to change that. Husband and wife Antonio and Andrea Gomez are the directors of the new Boco International Flamenco Festival, which opens this week at the Dairy Arts Center. They're here with me live in the studio this morning. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Shannon.
Good morning,
Thank you for having us.
Well, I have to ask, first of all, what made you want to start up a flamenco festival here in Boulder?
Well, we live here since 4 years old, it's our heritage, it's part of our family. Andrea and I, we met in a flamenco festival in 2015, and my dad that is here with us today, he's the godfather of this first edition and forever. So he's one of the best dancers and flamenco artists in the history, so it's part of our family business and it's part of our family lifestyle. So it's kind of a responsibility to make this in Boulder.
Yeah, well, you know, that's my dad, living legend, right? Antonio Canales is here with us. Good morning.
And good morning, Shannon. Good morning, everybody.
So this festival has several components. There are, of course, performances, but you're also offering workshops and there's even a film screening. Mm-hmm. Can you run down the list of events and their dates and times?
Sure. So Tuesday, April 4th is the first show at 7 p.m. Pastora Galvan and Dorantes, world-class flamenco jazz pianist. Wednesday, 7 p.m. is Antonio Canales' show, La Guitarra Canta. And both of these events are at the Dairy Arts Center. Mm-hmm. In the mornings, we have workshops mm-hmm. at the Dairy Arts Center, at the Museum of Boulder. And on Thursday, we have a free event open to the public, flamenco and live rumba band. Mm-hmm. From 6 to 9 at the St. Julian on Thursday.
Yeah.
So
we invite everyone to check the website, bocoflamenco.org. We have all the schedule posted over there. And please, I mean, we're going to take over Boulder in the next 2 days, or 3 days actually. So, yeah, we are here for you, Boulder and Denver and all the four range. So please step by at some point.
the workshops that you're offering are being taught by some of the masters of the craft, mm-hmm. yet Boulder isn't exactly known for having an active flamenco scene. Mm-hmm. If people are curious about the workshops, but perhaps a little intimidated due to the lack of familiarity with the genre, what would you advise them with regards to perhaps the necessary skills to make the most of the workshops?
The skill is the willingness to step by, to try something new. So ideally, is to show up is the best skill that you can have. So in the terms of skills of dance, for example, for the workshop, it's going to be an aesthetic kind of beginners to feel the rhythm and to feel the music and to feel the dance in your body. The same with the sing. Sing is going to be sing and rhythm, really basic, that you can actually try to manifest what flamenco is like arising on you. Kind of the same on guitar. I'm pretty much like when you play guitar, you need basic concepts to execute the guitar, but nothing to be intimidating. It's going to be really welcoming, something that we're trying to bring something really new for the community. So the skill is to come by.
Okay. Well, as we mentioned before, Antonio, you come from a very well-known family of flamenco heavyweights, mm-hmm. multi-generational. Mm-hmm. Your father is here with us. He's the acclaimed performer Antonio Canales.
Yes,
and you managed his dance company before you moved to Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
What brought you to Boulder, and how much have you missed being surrounded by the flamenco culture? And is that part of the impetus for creating this festival?
Totally. It's one of the main reasons. The reason that I came here, it was because of Andrea and love. So we fell in love passionately with each other. And we moved here in 2018. And then, since then, we are all about flamenco and Latin music and Latin lifestyle. We have our family here. All Andrea's family has been in Boulder for 12 years. So we always watch flamenco, play flamenco for our kids. So it's we have a 3.5 and a 1.5 years old little girls that are born here in Boulder. So we always are surrounded by flamenco. But we moved to Albuquerque for a 1 year period of time to be around flamenco because it's a big scene over there. It's one of the big cities in the United States and about flamenco. And when we figured it out, we find out that then my father, Canales, he was coming to LA to perform, and all his group, he was coming here. Andrea, that is really, is a fire. She's flame. She's the really the flame on the flamenco in this city. She's always like, we need to bring this in Boulder. So
it was a no-brainer. It was a no-brainer.
Right. So it's like, let's make this festival this year. Let's bring them all. So that was the main reason to make this happen.
Okay, well, let's remind folks what's the information that they can find? Where is it all happening? I know it's at the Dairy, but you know, mm-hmm. remind us again of
yes.
all the things that are going on.
BocoFlamenco.org.
Mm-hmm.
So Boco, like Boulder, Colorado.
Exactly.
Flamenco, FLAMENCO.
Yes, we are really doing this towards community. So we are grassroots movement, and we are really fortunate to have this world class. Not every festival that starts in any art form, they have this category of artists coming to town, and so we are really grateful. We are doing this through nonprofit, and we are really grateful to the Dairy Art, to all of our donors, and we need support. So we want to make this bolder, richer, cultural richer city, so because we love Boulder and we love this town, so please let's make this big.
And it is such an honor for us that Antonio Canales is the mm-hmm. godfather of and is right. the patron of this festival, so we're so honored that he's here. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's definitely come by and come see him and come meet all these incredible
absolutely
flamenco world-class artists.
Okay, Boulder, you heard it. The arts needs an audience to All be right. able to thrive and survive. I've been speaking with Antonio and Andrea Gomez, directors and founders of the new Boco International Flamenco Festival, which kicks off at the Dairy Arts Center tomorrow. Thank you both for coming to the studio this morning.
Thank you, Shannon.
Thank you so much.
We're going to end this segment on a musical note, of course, performed by David de Aral and Antonio Canales. The Rocky Flats Stewardship Council will hold a public meeting this morning over Zoom as part of its ongoing work to oversee the former nuclear weapons site located between Boulder and Golden. The meeting starts at 8:30, and a link to it is available on the City of Boulder's website. Tomorrow night, Regis University will hold a symposium on the nuclear legacy of Rocky Flats. The keynote speaker is Chris Iverson, the author of a book titled Full Body Burden, Growing Up in the Nuclear Shadow of Rocky Flats. She spoke with KGNU's Shelley Schlender ahead of the event.
Rocky Flats is one of the most important historical and environmental stories in the history of the United States. It is at the heart of the Cold War. There was extensive radioactive and toxic contamination that continues to the present day. And the public health effects of that contamination continue to the present day and will continue to affect us into the future.
Well, Kristen Iverson, for people who drive down between Golden and Boulder, there's just a little sign that says Rocky Flats. Somebody who doesn't know the history of what happened there may not know that it was a nuclear weapons plant that was top secret and made one of the most toxic substances around called plutonium.
That's exactly right. Rocky Flats began production in the early 1950s. What they produced, unbeknownst to the public, was plutonium triggers for nuclear weapons. That is the heart of every nuclear bomb produced in the United States.
That's quite amazing to think. It was less than 15 miles from Boulder. Really less than 20 miles from Denver, this plant making this very powerful and dangerous stuff.
Right. And example at Los Alamos, where they developed the nuclear bomb and produced some plutonium pits. If you worked at Los Alamos, you lived at Los Alamos, and it was all secret and contained. What was different with Rocky Flats was that they needed to depend upon a local workforce. So when I worked at Rocky Flats, there were almost 6,000 people working there. Workers were not allowed to talk about the kind of work that they did, that all going all the way back to the early 1950s, it was all top secret. They were not subject in the early years to any kind of environmental regulation. So there was a lot going on that did affect local populations. Over the course of almost 40 years, Rocky Flats produced more than 70,000 plutonium pits or triggers for nuclear weapons. And each one of those triggers contained enough breathable particles of plutonium to kill every person on Earth.
You grew up downwind of Rocky Flats.
Well, I grew up in Arvada, kind of on the edge of Arvada, not far from Stanley Lake. And we were pretty much directly downwind from fires that created toxic and radioactive clouds that passed over our neighborhood. Some of the other towns that were affected include Westminster, Broomfield, Superior, certainly, parts of Boulder. Anything southeast of the plant was most directly affected. But as Dr. Carl Johnson, who was the health director of Jefferson County, when a lot of this contamination was actively happening, he recommended that anyone within a 30-mile radius of Rocky Flats should be concerned. And he recommended that there be no home building, new home building within that 30-mile radius. So that's the area that is most directly affected, although some of the bigger fires, like the one in 1957 or 1969, created a large enough toxic cloud that it traveled beyond, not just beyond Arvada, Westminster, Broomfield, and those areas, but even beyond the Colorado border.
There was a push among citizens to close Rocky Flats, and Rocky Flats was finally closed, and then it went through being a Superfund site with a huge cleanup. And now, when we fast forward to today, what is Rocky Flats and what is its impact?
If a person were to drive down Highway 93, for example, and look over at the site, they would see open land. There would be no signage that would tell them what happened there or why it might be potentially dangerous to hike or bike at the Rocky Flats National Wildlife Refuge. What happened after the cleanup, and let me emphasize, it was a compromised cleanup. The site is not pristine by any means. There's still a great deal of contamination on site. Every time we have a major event like the flood in 2017 or the Marshall Fire more recently, anything that threatens the site in any way, we have a new concern about how much contamination is coming off site and still continuing to affect current residents around Rocky Flats. You know, our great, great, great grandchildren are still going to have to be worrying about plutonium at Rocky Flats. And with plutonium, something as small as a millionth of a gram, if it is breathed into the lungs or somehow taken into the body, can create a cancer.
Kristen Iverson, when people go to the event happening at Regis, will they get a chance to ask the experts questions as well as hear your talks?
Yes, I think this is a very unique and dynamic event. I'm going to be talking about the history and the legacy of Rocky Flats. And then I'm going to be joined by a panel of experts that are really extraordinary. They include John Lipsky, who was the FBI agent who led the raid on Rocky Flats, Dr. Mark Johnson, who was the past president of the Colorado Medical Society and the health director for Jefferson County, Randy Stafford, an analyst who has looked at all of the health studies and environmental studies at Rocky Flats.
Then this sounds like it's going to be an evening for anybody who might have any concerns about being downwind of Rocky Flats to hear what the current situation is with the fact that they live close to what was a very toxic site that was cleaned up according to the Superfund records, but not entirely cleaned up.
That's exactly right.
Are nuclear weapon triggers still made in the United States?
Yes, they are. Production of plutonium triggers has restarted at Los Alamos, and they are currently talking about starting it up at the Savannah River site. So it's a very current and concerning topic, what we plan to do in this country with our nuclear weapons production and the cost of that production, health-wise and otherwise.
We've been talking about a nuclear weapons plant. What about the latest generation of nuclear power plants? There are climate specialists, people in the Department of Energy, who argue that to combat global climate change, we might be better off if we have some of the latest generation of nuclear power plants online, because they are the quickest way we can get to having less carbon being put into the atmosphere. Do you have an opinion about that from what you've seen with Rocky Flats?
Let me say this. One thing that concerns me about nuclear power production as well as nuclear weapons production is that we do not have a history or a standard of truth and transparency in this country between the Department of Energy and the public. And that includes, to some extent, I would say even the EPA or CDPHE, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. And I think until we can trust these institutions to provide full and accurate information with respect to the potential risks of these kinds of technologies, I think we have to be very skeptical.
Thanks to Shelley Schlender for that interview with Chris Iverson, author of Full Body Burden, Growing Up in the Nuclear Shadow of Rocky Flats. Iverson will speak at a Tuesday night symposium, The Legacy of Rocky Flats, at Regis University in Denver. The event starts at 6 p.m. That's all for today's Morning Magazine. Special thanks to Benita Lee, Juanito Hurtado, Jack Armstrong, Alexis Kenyon, Shelley Schlender, and to our guests from Boco International Flamenco Festival, Andrea and Antonio Gomez. I've been your host, Shannon Young. If you'd like to comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower, and then an interview with author and journalist Erica Hayasaki. That's just after the news headlines from the BBC.